Hello, welcome to Adaptation Today, a podcast for anyone interested in learning more about adaptation and how to study it. I am Dr. Gracie Bain, finally I can say that, and today I'm talking to some of the organizers and participants at the LFA-AAS 2024 conference, Adaptation in and Out of the Classroom. This was the third virtual joint conference of the Literature Film Association and the Association of Adaptation Studies. Today we're here to talk with some of the people who organized and or presented at the 2024 LAF-AAS conference to learn about some of the ins and outs of this particular conference and major themes that stood out to the experts. As someone that was unable, unfortunately, to attend the conference this year, I'm so excited to be having this conversation and learning more from all of our panel. So today I'm with Drs. Zeta Oz, Julie Grossman, Katie McLean, and Jim Fleury. If you want to take a second to introduce yourself to the audience.
Hi, I'm Julie Grossman, and I teach literature and film at Le Moyne College in Syracuse, New York. I am the co-editor with Barton Palmer of the book series Adaptation and Visual Culture at Palgrave.
I am Jim Fleury at Washington University in St. Louis, where I teach classes on video game studies and transmedia franchises, and I had presented at the conference.
My name's Katie McLean. I currently teach at Colorado Mesa University in Grand Junction, Colorado, and I teach on American literature, and I work in adaptations as much as I possibly can in the classroom.
Hello, everyone. This is Zeta Oz. I am teaching at University of Delaware and mostly working on transnational film remakes, cinemas under political orthodoxies and censorship. And I am editing a collection for Julie and Barton titled Adaptation Practices in Turkish Literature, Cinema, and Media, which will come out very shortly in time.
Wonderful to meet you all. I am very excited. So we'll just go ahead and get started. My first question is really just a very general one. Those of you that organized and participated, why were you interested in this particular conference?
So I can give a bit of background. In 2021, as we were still in the major throes of the pandemic, the Literature Film Association and the Association of Adaptation Studies decided to make good on a long-term goal to collaborate on a conference event. While the pandemic was so difficult in so many ways, in this one way, it was really generative because the prospect of having a joint online conference that these two organizations could work on together became a reality, as we were able to obviate questions that had been dogging us for years about where to hold such a joint conference and how it would be organized or institutionalized in general. So four of the people involved in leading these organizations at the time, Tom Leach, Alan Redman, Pete Kunze, and I organized the first joint meeting of AAS and LFA. So the February 2022 pandemic-determined online conference was aptly called Only Connect. Since that time, we've had two additional joint conference meetings, and I am thrilled to add we've had the material help of additional members of both organizations. This past year, Tom Allen and I were joined by John Sanders and Zeta Oz, and both John and Zeta were major contributors to the organization of the 2024 Conference on Adaptation and Pedagogy. And I must say, I was originally a little resistant to this year's topic because I always had the sense that while people want to talk about teaching and pedagogy as sidebars during conferences, online gatherings, as well as in-person conferences, scholars are sometimes less excited to write academic papers on the topic. So I am very happy to have been proved wrong, since I think the conference was amazing.
And personally for me, I was excited to hear about this online conference because international travel is not always an option for everyone. And especially the AAS conference tends to be an international trip for a lot of people in the United States. So it was fantastic to have this shared opportunity because we were able to hear about adaptation studies research all around the world, which was the coolest part of the experience for me. And of course, I'm always excited to hear interesting ideas about adaptation and pedagogy.
And for me, I couldn't agree more with what Katie said about the international travel being a challenge, especially when it comes to the AAS conference typically being held abroad. So for me, the conference provided a rare opportunity to focus on adaptation from a pedagogical perspective, or at least it was a rare opportunity for me. With any conference I attend, though, I really try to make it an opportunity to attend panels that are going to be helpful for my not just research, but also my teaching. And from the LFA AAS conference, I was able to get feedback on how I've taught media franchises and to learn from others, especially from my co-panelists of Liam and Kyle, about their own best practices for helping students understand the relationship between adaptation and franchising. So going forward, especially now that I'm in a teaching track position, I'm interested in attending more pedagogy-focused conferences and panels as much as I can.
That's great. And I think all of you kind of pointed towards my personal main draw of this conference, besides seeing absolutely like fabulous people, is the virtual nature of it, being a graduate student, not necessarily having the funding to really even make, to be honest, a trip to a different state, and being able to just attend this virtually would be great. So a huge draw of this conference is that it's virtual. So those of you involved in the planning, can you talk a little bit about the process of online conferencing and the importance of virtual conferencing?
I think I can chime in here. First thing I'd like to say is that I believe virtual conferences allow us to be bold and try things that we're not necessarily sure of the responses that we might receive. That's why, even though we have always considered pedagogy of adaptation as a possible conference topic, we also had underlying concerns. Like, we had questions like, is there someone who claims their prior scholarship on pedagogy and adaptation that we can invite as a keynote? Or are people going to be interested in talking about their teaching irrespective of their research specialization? But after careful consideration, we thought that actually this joint conference seemed like the perfect venue to be bold and to choose to be bold. Of course, there are reasons for that, right? Some of them are the number of people who are familiar with both associations, the flexibility of not having a keynote speaker, and the more relaxed, casual environments that allowed us to accept 10-minute presentations in different styles. But most importantly, the accessibility of it, Gracie, like you have mentioned, people who are not able to travel but still wants to be a part of it. And I can also say, just like Julie emphasized, that I consider this online conference as a big, big success.
Can you tell us a little bit more about how many people presented or how many people attended?
Yeah, sure. I can give you some numbers, actually. So the conference lasted 2 days, September 22nd and 23rd. And on the first day, we had 9 sessions, 27 talks in total. It lasted 11 hours. And even though it was a long time, thanks to the comfort of online conferences, we had 86 attendees that day. And I'm not just talking about a login and logout kind of a scenario, because we had more than 20 people reaching to 500 minutes of attendance. And, you know, second day is not much different either. We had 7 sessions and 21 talks in total with 87 attendees. And once again, when I look at the time that people were online, we have people who stayed for 400, 500 minutes. So these numbers are huge to me.
Great. I definitely don't know what I've done for 500 minutes at one time before. So I do have kind of have a follow-up question to that. Do you think that those large numbers are because of the online format?
I mean, of course, we cannot deny that. The online conference allowed people to be present in their own way, without necessarily causing a problem to their regular routines or responsibilities. Some of us went to teach in between sessions and came back. Some of us joined as they were commuting from one place to the other. Some of us had parental duties at the background that coincided with the conference, yet still had the chance to listen. And, you know, these kinds of accommodations are important for people. And another thing I would like to add is the fact that the chat box, which has never stopped in this online conference, you know, the amount of interaction we had, the questions that were asked, the documents that were shared, all were incredible. And I'm not sure, honestly, if I speak with people this much at a regular conference. And, you know, people were also aware of the value of that chat box, so much so that when the conference was over, I was continuously receiving emails and people were asking for the script of that chat box. And none of those things would be possible without the perks of an online conference. And one last thing I had to add is that we had people from all over the world. The US, UK, Canada, Germany, Turkey, you know, India, China, Portugal, Spain, Czechia, I mean, you name it, all over. And I'm thinking about the times that we're hosting LFA conferences in the US. And unfortunately, we don't get such diversity, for example, because it's costly, because it's time consuming to travel. It's not easy for everyone. That's why even though, you know, online conferences might have become prevalent in our lives due to the pandemic. And, you know, the pandemic was also the beginning of this conference as well. All these restrictions it brought to our lives at the time turned into some kind of a freedom in our academic environment. So I cannot undermine and, you know, deny the value of online conferences at all.
Is there anything in particular that strikes you as different between online conferences and in-person meetings or conferences?
So I would add another word about the chat, echoing Seda's comments. So from the very first moments of the conference, the Zoom chat was very active. What an interesting pandemic, post-pandemic adaptation of the conference venue when we're now multitasking like crazy during online scholarly meetings. But I feel like the multiplicity of the event owed something to the lively chat, which matched the dynamism I think we see generally in adaptation studies. I was struck that as casual as the Zoom chat was, there were some really insightful connections drawn and provocations offered. For example, Tom Leach asking on day one in the chat, quote, are adaptations adapted texts minus or adapted texts plus or something else entirely? And this question stayed with me throughout the conference as I wondered repeatedly if the most interesting adaptations are adapted text plus, plus, or plus squared, multiplied, augmented, continued, or refigured in some striking way.
And I'm going to add on about the Zoom chat, which I think is definitely one of the most appealing aspects of any online conference, but I found that to be especially true of this one. And the chat makes it not only a more lively conference, but it's a great way to exchange resources and to benefit from the collective intelligence of the speakers and the audience members. So for me, a Zoom chat at an online conference, it's as engaging as like Twitch live chat, but way less overwhelming and way less overstimulating.
Yeah, I think kind of the relationship between the audience and the speakers in an online conference with the chat option is really quite special. So, okay, so we talked about the form. Now I would kind of like to move to the content. So I want to ask, what is your approach to teaching adaptation? This was what the conference was about. And also, why is it an important topic to discuss in a conference?
So just to jump back in, my approach to teaching adaptation is primarily to think about both teaching texts as adaptations or simultaneous narratives, as well as teaching students to adapt as part of their critical engagement with literature. For me, this approach allows students to forge connections between texts, but also recognize their own voice within the research process, which often is a difficult task for undergraduate students within an academic sea of published journal articles, famous literature, and constant lecture in their college setting. And as one of those attendees at just about every session for this conference, I was excited to see such ideas from presentations as well as chat conversations at this conference.
And I do want to plug Adaptations Today's website, and then I hope that Jim and Katie talk more about later about our section or tab that we have on teaching adaptation. It's really, it's very exciting, and I'm very excited for that to develop. So I know that some of our listeners weren't able to attend the conference / the person talking to you right now. So for those of us who were unable to attend or maybe, you know, could just pop in and out and it didn't get to go to all the panels we wanted to, what were some themes that you saw as consistent throughout the conference?
So I can say a few words about that based on my many hundreds of minutes at the conference alongside Katie and others. I loved that in the very first session called Theorizing Adaptation Pedagogy, Colleen Kennedy Carpot made the point that adaptation scholars are always learning. And I found this to be a really inspiring frame for linking teaching adaptation and doing adaptation studies. So all texts are open for rewriting, and the classroom is the space in which many of us are not only discussing how and why texts are rewritten, but also learning from the adaptations we teach and from our students how to reread texts we think we know. Along these lines, the session on creativity and screenwriting was really wonderful. Camilla Elliott shared some of her students' work, including student adaptations of What We Do in the Shadows called What We Do in the Light, and featuring invented diaries of Dracula that had really expressive fonts. Camilla quoted from Cutchin's Raw and Welch's The Pedagogy of Adaptation, where they say that the only response to art is more art. And I just think that's a beautiful way to capture the value of adaptations and also their relevance to students in the context of creativity and expression. Practically thinking, Sahar Riyad Hamza asked a question about why there isn't more work on adaptation and screenwriting being done, which I thought was really important. Finally, in this panel, there was an emphasis on adaptation and play, the notion of play relating to the need that teachers should be comfortable with letting go of some control. A focus on games, play, and team-based learning was really discernible throughout the conference. I loved the self-conscious play with agency many of the papers articulated, reminding us that adaptation is a product as well as a process. Who or what is responsible for the activity of adaptation? Pamela Demery's paper even asked about nature itself as an adapting and adapted text, stretching our conceptions of adaptive processes and products, sources and scripts, and what is made or evolves out of them. And finally, I also really appreciated in general the opening up of what it means to teach adaptation. I've become quite promiscuous in what I think of as adaptation, since the dynamic of change is such a central aspect of identity and any engagement whatsoever. So I was drawn to Katie McLean sharing that she brings adaptation into all of her classrooms.
That's great. Thanks. Kind of, you talk a little bit about this, Julie, and what you just said, but as I was reading through the conference program, I saw a couple of panels organized around digital adaptations and AI. I also noticed that several papers not included in those panels included the keywords like transmedia, artificial intelligence, and digital adaptations. AI and digital adaptations are huge topics at the moment, just within the academy in general, right? We're always talking about it, it seems now. So I was wondering, you know, if y'all also saw that, slash, what do teachers need to think about in terms of these things when they're talking about adaptations?
So I want to pick up on the term transmedia, which is a term that I've noticed gets used very broadly by industry professionals, by journalists, and even by scholars. And so I'd like to clarify that I would define transmedia as a form of media franchise management in which one story expands across multiple media, whereas multimedia refers to a form of franchise management in which one story is retold across multiple media. So while this implies that adaptation refers only to multimedia franchising, like The Last of Us TV series, adaptation studies remains a useful framework for analyzing transmedia franchising as well, like the Marvel Cinematic Universe Disney Plus series. So, for example, adaptation can help us understand medium-specific affordances and limitations that inform how a franchise functions uniquely in different media, like how the Blade Runner live-action films function differently than the Blade Runner anime, which themselves are going to function differently than the upcoming Blade Runner live action TV series that I'm looking forward to. So although transmedia remains a dominant franchising strategy, at least in a Western context, there are still plenty of multimedia examples being made, such as the upcoming Harry Potter TV series that's going to be based on the novels. Whether someone is teaching an adaptation-focused course or is teaching a franchising-focused course, as I tend to do, we should keep in mind that there are a lot of valuable ways in which adaptation studies and franchising studies intersect.
And here I actually want to add a more general note about the organization of the panels, besides Jim's focus on transmedia. So for some reason, we do not necessarily claim the pedagogy of adaptation as part of our scholarship, even though we have been teaching adaptation over and over again. So that's why when we were writing the call for paper, we wanted to leave space for people to bring in whatever their experiences are. Most of the presenters share the kind of classes they are teaching, the assignments they are giving to their students, and even the failed syllabus designs that they come up with. So everything we see in this program is actually a microcosmic representation of teaching adaptation around the world. That's, I can say that easily. And of course, AI and digital humanities is new, and it's understandable that there are more questions about it than answers, hence more interest. So that doesn't surprise me that that was kind of an like up-and-coming, overarching discussion. But I also don't necessarily agree that the conference panels are centered around it. On the contrary, I think that there was diversity on the topics and themes. Starting with theorizing adaptation pedagogy, like Julie said, and leading all the way to screenwriting, auteurs, genre, memory, classroom communities, international Shakespeares, teaching across borders, teaching adaptation in first-year writing classrooms. You know, I wouldn't want to be unfair to all those panels and what they've brought into the discussion.
It's also, I don't know, it's good. I like listening to it too, because I think one of my personal goals for this podcast is just to kind of simply parse out some of those phrases that we are using in adaptation and really just kind of the breadth of like, what does adaptation studies mean when we're talking about adaptations? And specifically for people who are entering this field or who are newly interested. So I appreciate both of your answers and kind of the clarification, because I think that that's just helpful just in general. So in closing, if there was one thing that you would say you learned from this conference, what would it be?
So I learned so many new ideas from my own classroom for this conference, and I honestly can't wait to learn more things. And as Gracie kind of implied earlier, one potential path toward that goal is through our website, Adaptation Today, which is currently accepting peer-reviewed reflection posts as public scholarship opportunities via the blog What I Learned Teaching Adaptation Today, a concept definitely inspired by this conference. So if any listeners have learned from their students while teaching adaptations or learned about adaptations from their students, we hope they will submit a brief post to share with our listeners and our readers. Please see our website for the full call for papers.
Absolutely. And we'll also put that link in our show notes so you can easily access it. So thank you everyone for participating. This podcast is supported by the website Adaptation Today, which you can, as I said, find the link to in our show notes. To keep up with Adaptation Today, visit our website, adaptationtoday.com. Join our listserv where you can stay up to date on all the news in the field. Make sure to rate, review, and subscribe to the podcast.